Midnight on the interstate, and I didn't feel so great until I saw the city.
Welcome back to Straight from the Source, Michael Russo, coming to you from Washington, D.C., and my partner in crime is down wearing sunglasses on a lanai in western Florida, back at his old stomping grounds, Joe Smith, who, Joe, isn't it crazy? I feel like I see you almost less than I saw you when you, like, in person when you covered the Lightning. I honestly don't think we've seen each other in person for, like, 2 months.
I don't think I've seen you this calendar year, right?
Yeah, definitely not.
And then I didn't see you the holiday, so, like, we're kind of, like, passing us in the night, you know, like you never know what the hell's gonna happen. But I've heard you're still alive and well, which is good.
Yep.
And I don't think I'll see you.
I don't know about well, but alive.
I don't think I'll see you until a couple more weeks, maybe.
So yeah, easily, because I'm going to I got unless you come to the home game against Buffalo, which I don't even know if you're back in town for. And then I'm not going to be at Hockey Day Minnesota. That's the Flyer game, and then I go on a little vacation, and then go to Phoenix and the All-Star game in Dallas. So, yeah, it's going to be a little bit. Man, was I thankful for you yesterday. I was traveling all day. Joe was on the Matt Boldy move news. 7 years, $49 million. I think that the perception out there for the last really couple months was that he was going to get a bridge deal. I think that even Bill Guerin and the Wild thought that he was going to get a bridge deal. And then all of a sudden, I think they just started to realize, hey, you know what? If they can lock him in at $7 million a year, they'll just deal with the aftermath. And there's going to be an aftermath. But what they are betting on is that in 2-3 years, when this cap is skyrocketing, if Matt Boldy continues on the trajectory that he's on, 68 points in 89 games, that this is going to be a steal.
That's what they hope, and that's what they think, and a lot of teammates feel that way too. And you look at it, I think bridge deal would have made sense too, just because they keep the number down, but it wouldn't have been that much lower than $7 million, even if you had a 3-4 year deal. So if you're thinking the cap's going to go up significantly in a couple of years, which they hope and they expect it to be, that $7 million, if he's a 25 goal scorer, in this league, is going to age pretty well. So, I think it's hard for Boldy to pass up his first fortune, of course. And I think if Billy Guerin's like, hey, this guy's for 7 years, I have Kaprizov for five, and you have Ek, and so you cross those things off the list, and you can kind of build around that. So the key, I think, in this whole scenario is deciding, is this guy a cornerstone player, which that's what Guerin called him the other day. And if you decide that, you'd be as proactive as you can to get him at a good number for a number of years. If you believe in this guy on and off the ice, which they do, then it'll pay off in the end.
And obviously, I mean, last year he just came onto the scene and just did wonders for the Wild in the second half. Kevin Fiala erupted with Boldy as well, after Boldy scored in his first NHL game, the winning goal in his hometown of Boston. And then it's just been clear sailing ever since. It's interesting because he's obviously getting points this year. But I do think there's been a little bit of a sophomore slump, Joe. And I think that a lot of Wild fans are starting to look at that as like, that's what he's going to be in the future. But I think now you get this off your mind. And now if we could become the Boldy that we saw last year, and definitely continue to develop in his career, I think that this really could be a great contract.
It definitely could be. And look at this year, though, for him is he didn't have Kevin Fiala, obviously got traded in the offseason, so one of his top line mates left. He kind of juggled around the lineup early in the season, where he was playing with Rossi one night, he was playing with another person one night. So until recently, he hasn't had consistent kind of line mates there, now with Hartman and Goudreau. And so I think there still is part of him, his instinct is to be a playmaker or a setup guy, which he's done his whole life. And I think the Wild are trying to get him to be more aggressive and assertive and just command the game. When you have, there are not many guys on this roster aside from like Kirill Kaprizov or maybe Zuccarello that have the skill set and can be as dynamic as Matt Boldy can be. And they just want him to be, take more assertiveness and kind of take command of the game. They saw that a couple weeks ago in like a Saturday game against St. Louis. He was four or five plays were like highlight reel worthy, and he didn't score, but he created a chance and a rebound, and that could have easily been goals. So if you see more of that from him, you'll have more of a threat in the playoffs. You can't just be a one line team. So they need him and that Hartman line to be a threat offensively so they can actually have some secondary scoring.
How much you talk to Billy as much as I do. I mean, how much do you think he realizes that, obviously right now their cap situation is what it is. But that, for the rest of the season, maybe at the deadline, instead of us for 22 years saying this team needs to go out and get a center, that maybe the priority will be, you know what, let's go get Boldy some help, put somebody on that line and see if maybe, you know, they could go on a little bit of an ascension.
And I think like the biggest name out there is Patrick Kane, of course, and who better to add on the other side to have two lines. They have Zuccarello and Kaprizov, and you have Kane and Boldy. And obviously that's might be wishful thinking for a lot of Wild fans, but, I think you're right. I think, and it's my hunch is, I think, you know, Guerin kind of does want to give this team a chance and go for it and make a move. They have a ton of cap space right now at the deadline for this year that they can pick up an UFA, and they do have a really good prospect pool, and they do have their first round picks. And I know they don't want to mortgage their future. But I think it'll be interesting in the next 3-4 weeks to see this team will tell him, are they good enough to win a round or two, or how much do you want to mortgage if you don't think your team is a cup contender? If you want to spend a lot for your team to just win one round and maybe make some noise in the second round, or do you think you legitimately with one extra or two extra pieces can come out of a Western Conference that, you know, Colorado's down, you know, Dallas and Winnipeg, if you think you have a chance to beat those teams that are ahead of you in the standings, then why not give you guys a shot?
Yeah, I've gotten a lot of people ask me about Kane and Taves, and I really do think that either one of them makes a lot of sense for this team, but more so to me, Kane. You know, as you just said, I just think that, you know, if you put him on that line, you know, suddenly you have two lines of scoring threats, and then you add the Eriksson-Ek line. I think that's a team that can make some noise.
And the power play, look at what the power play would look like if you have him on there too. I don't know how that would change the configuration on the power play, but yeah, you have guys that can move from one power play to the next one, have more depth there. But no question, you need a couple of scoring lines. And if you have the fourth line, those Reeves and Dewar and Shaw, that can be a really good plug-in physical line. You don't need them to play more than 10 some minutes. That's a really good line for a playoff type team.
Yep, exactly. And you know playoffs a lot better than some of us, by the way. Like when I look at the Wild trade board or the NHL trade board that we're doing, there's other wingers there that make sense as well. A lot of Wild fans have asked me about Tyler Bertuzzi. I think that he would make sense as well. The problem with him is always injuries, and but he is somebody that you put on a wing, it could be pretty interesting.
I think so too. There's others like maybe not bigger names, whether it's Duclair or NSD, other ones that are not going to be cost you quite as much. That can be a scoring threat, or maybe with a fresh start can do some damage for you. So I just don't think we're going to see a Bo Horvat or a Besser or a Chychrun or these other bigger names that are on there. But I think if you go down the list and you see some teams, and even ones that maybe aren't on our trade board, for Tampa all those years, you're always looking for who's on the TSN or the Athletic trade board. And it ends up being Brandon Hagel, who was given two first round picks for, or Barclay Goodrow. Sometimes those underrated moves make the biggest difference when it comes to the playoffs.
No doubt. It is. I mean, this is the season of throwing stuff against the wall, and obviously we've been seeing that lately. Somebody wrote a giant story about the Wild and the Pittsburgh Penguins having trade talks. That completely seems to be a fallacy. Mm-hmm. Considering the reporting that you and I both have done on that subject. Chychrun also, Wild have no interest. It just doesn't make sense. The one that still interests me is Besser. Mm-hmm. But the only way that Besser would make sense is if Vancouver retained a ton of salary, because obviously he's got extra term on his deal.
Yeah, and I think that's Bill Guerin another day about that. I'm like, I know you don't like to give up asset for rentals, but isn't that pretty much mostly your market right now? If you look at your cap space going into next year, they don't have a lot that they can really look at. What they with the Boldy deal, you have $9 million left for like seven guys if you keep most of those guys. So, I mean, I know that Twitter has a lot of good negotiators that say that's going to be easy, no problem, but I find it a little more tricky. So I think that they're in the rental market this year mostly, unless they can get a hockey trade where you move some salary, you move a guy that's established player on your team that with term that you can maybe, you know, and we've talked about that a little bit more in the last couple of days and stories on guys on this team who could be on the move for cap purposes.
Yep, absolutely. Let's discuss that right now. By the way, I'm still waiting for us to announce the Freddie Goudreau 8 years times one contract. Do you think he'll take 8 years at $8 million? Just get it done. I think Dean happy.
I think Dean will want to go back to the 13-year. Like, give them Parise money, you know, and see if they can exactly lock him in. But hey, everybody knocks.
Definitely Parise term.
Everybody knocks him. I get that in the love affair with Everson, but he's a good player. And at the right number, you know, very like, you know, a guy you don't really think about a lot. He's not going to get a lot of headlines usually, at least especially with us. But I think overall, he's a guy that every team kind of needs, right? Swiss Army knife, a guy who can play the penalty kill, a smart player, unselfish, you know, guys like him in the room. So I think, yes, he's not your superstar, but you know, I wouldn't give him 8x8, but you know, I'm sure he'll be getting a deal sometime this summer.
Yep. Yeah, I think that if he's smart, he'll take a team-friendly deal here. Let's discuss the UFAs and how the Wild get this done. Right now, going into next season, you got Reeves and Dumba as UFAs. You have Sam Steele, Brandon Duhame, Mason Shaw, Kalen Addison, and Philip Gustafson as RFAs. Only at this point, I mean, it's pretty crazy. When you think about it, $9 million of cap space if the cap goes to $83.5 million. How the heck do they get this done, Joe?
Well, I mean, I think you make your priorities, you know, first in line, like Boldy was number one priority. Now what's your number two priority? Like I would argue, you know, getting Gustafson under contract would be one of them. And he's not going to cost you a ton, but the more this goes, if he ends up having this year that he's had, he's really young. I mean, not really experienced in this league, but he'll take, I don't know if it's probably a couple year deal with, I don't know what the number will be, but I think the priority will be to sign him. You know, Goodrell will probably be signed. He won't be much of a hassle of negotiation. The question I have is Kalen Addison, Mike. Clearly he's a guy that they trust in the power play. They've had issues with him defensively. They scratched him. We wrote about that. So they wanted to see more from him in that end before, you know, committing, but what is the reasonable ask on his side, and is he going to be a priority for them next year?
Yeah, that's the big one that I wonder about too. Like, I just wonder what his price is going to be. And, you know, I mean, the thing is that if they, at a minimum, they're not going to have Dumba on this team next year, whether they trade him or not. And, you know, if you have Brock Faber there, there's a right shot guy. They have Spacha coming, a right shot guy. I'm hearing from sources that they have a lot of interest in Luke Shen. Obviously, Tampa wants him back, but I think a lot of teams want Luke Shen. He's a right shot guy if they went and acquired him. I just wonder, you know, if Kalen is somebody that they are going to make a long-term commitment to, or if they would even consider moving him this offseason.
I think they could consider moving him, but I think you're right. The depth there on the right side, at least for NHL-ready depth, isn't quite there. You know, if you trade Dumba, I know you talked to Dumba, I think, earlier today for a story, but there's a good chance he gets moved to the deadline, but you need to have somebody replace those 20 minutes in the penalty kill. And if you're not ready to put Kalen Addison in that top four, which I don't know if they are necessarily yet, you need somebody to get back that can play in that role. You can't count on Brock Faber to be ready to go in NHL ready top four April 6th or whatever it is. So right now, the right shot defenseman that are most NHL ready is Andre Schuster, who I loved in Tampa and a great guy, but he's more of a third pairing guy for your team. So that's where it gets tricky and the Dumba situation gets kind of murky. Is like, yeah, like an ideal situation, you get something for him because he's not going to be coming back next year. But if you dump him, you still need somebody who's a competent veteran NHL defenseman to play that role. And Luke Shen, I like him a lot. I wonder if Garen thinks, is he a guy who can plug in for Dumba next to Brodin? I mean, maybe, very well, maybe. But that's the question you have to ask yourself if you're Bill Guerin when you decided to move Matt Dumba. You can't move it just to dump him out of here and move him.
100%.
Plus, he's a really loved guy in that room, as you know, you've been there longer than I have. But the fans may have nitpick him a lot, but the guys in the room, you know, he loves Minnesota. So
he absolutely loves Minnesota. I talked to him today, as Joe mentioned, for a story, and he did cut open a vein, and he admitted, and this will be in The Athletic later tonight in the game story, but he basically said he knows that every single day that he comes to the rink could be his last on the Minnesota Wild. He's had incredibly open conversation, an honest conversation with Bill Guerin, so he understands that there is a chance that they're going to trade him. But as Joe just mentioned, you know, Dumba might think that he's got one foot out the door. The one foot out the door might happen this summer. It might not happen before the trade deadline. Bill Guerin is not going to move him unless they get better. It's not going to be just trade him and just plug in Alex Goligoski for the rest of the season there. You know, you could get by for a little bit with Goligoski, but he's going to want to get some sort of defenseman back that is going to be able to play a top four role in significant minutes for this team in some capacity, whether it's in the Dumba trade or another trade. And that other trade, let's get to another one that we've been reporting a lot of lately, is Jordan Greenway. I think you and I both have this perception right now that Greenway is on the block, and it might not be a summer deal. It might be in advance of a trade deadline deal, you know, for myriad reasons. One, they need the cap space for the summer. You know, you can trade Jordan Greenway and his $3 million and sign Brandon Duhaime for maybe half the price and put him in that same role next to Foligno and Eriksson Ek next year. The other reason is that there is zero production from Jordan Greenway all season long. And the third reason is what happened a week and a half ago, where he just essentially didn't show up for a game, according to our reporting. And that really put the team in a bind on a second of a back-to-back with no extra forwards on the roster, Joe. And you and I both know Bill Guerin, and you and I both know Dean Evason. They could not have been happy about that situation.
Absolutely not. And it kind of my spidey senses went up that day. I covered that game, and when they announced he was a non-COVID illness, the team did during the game. Like, by the way, he was a late scratch for this reason. And I asked Evason about it afterwards, and he wouldn't even say he was illness. He was like, he was unavailable. That's all I'm going to say about that. And he looked kind of ticked off. You're like, okay, well, clearly it wasn't just a run-of-the-mill, like, you know, the flu or whatever it might be. So clearly that ticked them off, and it put them in a bad spot. More, you know, obviously not everybody is 100% every day, but, you know, they had two guys that were injured that game. They had two forwards that got hurt in that same game. They had gotten down to nine forwards on a back-to-back. Kaprizov had to play 26 minutes, that, you know, 12 minutes in the third period. So, you know, when you make mistakes, everybody makes mistakes, of course, but you make mistakes that hurt the team and put them in a bad spot, it definitely draw some ire from your GM and your coach. So, you know, I think they liked Greenway as a person, as a kid. Obviously, he was a guy that they signed to an extension, I think, believe last year. But if all those variables that you laid out all kind of in a perfect storm work together, where it would not be surprising to me at all if he has moved this summer, or maybe if there's a deal that comes out to play before, you have Duhaime, you can slide in there and be in that shutdown role.
Yeah, that's just my spider senses. And to Joe's point, like, I know Billy Guerin loves Jordan Greenway, mm-hmm. loves him as a person off the ice, but he's also a no-nonsense guy, and I cannot imagine that this organization was happy with the you know, really the lurch that he put them in a couple weeks ago.
And I don't think Greenway's not a bad guy either. Not a bad kid. He doesn't hurt anybody. He's not out hurting people other than on off the ice. Like, he did maybe just make some questionable decisions, or maybe not as mature decisions in that situation. And those are all factors you have to play out when you want to build a team they're big on culture, right? They're big on culture, big on accountability. That's been like kind of the bread and butter of what they wanted to build here with Evason and Guerin. So that has to be part of the consideration.
What do you make of the team right now, Joe? You know, it's just been a weird year. It's like they've been successful. They're winning games, but, you know, take it from somebody that, you know, covered them last year. They were an extremely entertaining team last year, but in the end, it got them nowhere. Right? They lost in the first round. This year, it doesn't feel like they're nearly as entertaining. You know, they're winning games that they're not playing great in. You know, I didn't think they were outstanding at all in New York. They defended well, but they weren't great in the offensive zone. And then, you know, Arizona, really lucky to win that. And there's been a lot of those experiences this year.
There have been. And I think there was a little, I mean, as much as they were exciting team last year, and the 25 come from behind wins and just outscoring their problems, it might have been a little more smoke and mirrors than that was let on, in terms of that's not a recipe you can live and die on, especially they found out in the playoffs. And Bill Guerin mentioned that Saturday in the midseason review. Like, they talked a lot with Dean Evason over the summer. Like, we need to change a bit. And kind of an eye-opener for them of not just playing the more tight defensive style of hockey, but handling adverse moments in a better fashion, like they didn't do when they're up 2-1 and they thought they were to go up 3-1 and win the series. So I think this team, yes, is probably more boring to watch than the last year's team. They don't have a ton of guys that can scare you offensively, but they play together. You know, they play well defensively. Their expected goals allowed numbers is right up there at the top of the league. Their goaltending has been better than I think you and I expected going into the season. And so they have a lot of elements that can help you win a playoff series. So, but yeah, they're a hard team to read. Like, you know, the other day, they're on the same points as the Lightning had before they played them the other day. And I was like, it's kind of crazy to think, but, give them credit for winning games that they're supposed to win against kind of a softer schedule in December to kind of padded their record. But I think now we'll see in the next couple of weeks what they're made of. You know, Capitals, Carolina, Tampa, Florida, like all four on the road. That's going to be a really good test for them to see how they match up.
Yeah, absolutely. You've gotten to cover Kirill Kaprizov here now for half a season. One goal from 100 might happen tonight in front of his idol, Alex Ovechkin, who knows. What's your impression from somebody that's covered a ton of superstars, from Victor Hedman to Stamkos to Kucherov to Point? You've seen some incredible players in this league, Joe. Where's Kaprizov stand?
Right near top of that list, I think. And he's so young, too. But I covered the Wild Lightning game in Minnesota, and I was walking the hallway, and I saw Kucherov, and he was talking to Kaprizov in the hallway. And he's like, hey, Joe, shook his hand, said, he's like, how you liking it here? And I almost wanted to tell him, like, it's fun to get to watch this guy every day, pointing to Kirill Kaprizov, you know? just because there are games, like, you know, no matter if it's down one goal or two, this guy could just break the whole thing open and find a way to, he's just one of those magnetic, dynamic players that, and has that it factor where he wants to be a difference maker. And I kind of saw from afar last year, I'm like, oh, this guy's obviously flashy, he can, great hands, like, skills off the charts, but I'm really impressed of committed defensively he is. Like, a two-way game is better than I think people realize. If you watch him day in and day out, you see how much he works at the defensive end, he back checks, he's a really more of a physical player than people realize too. Like that Doughty exchange back in LA like a couple months ago, he didn't back down at all to him. So like, I think I've appreciated, you appreciate more the players when you see them day to day, when you watch them practice, when you see him and Zuccarello after morning ski for 25 minutes out there just messing around, going through imaginary plays, and Bill Guerin smacking the glass, being like, get the hell off the ice, okay? You have a game in like 6 hours. So definitely been a treat to watch him. And I just wish, like you know, he's getting a lot better with his English, of course, in interviews. Such a really great personality. Like, looking forward to seeing him as he opens up and gets more comfortable speaking the language for us to get to know him, which lets the fans get to know him better, too.
Yeah. Joe, let's do this. Let's take a break, and we'll come back with Twitter questions. And hopefully that break is Jeff Domet talking about Manscaped.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
All right, back here straight from the source, Michael Russo, Joe Smith. Michael's coming from Washington, D.C. Joe Smith from his old stomping grounds in St. Pete, Florida. See the orange trees in the background,
the pool, and the lemon, and stuff, yeah.
Yep. And Joe has been nice enough to take off his shades, though. He's doing this from his lanai.
just a joke, you know.
Yeah. Joe, you land in the sun, and you're getting to cover this father-son trip. You are going to come back to Minnesota, though, right?
I think it was a one-way ticket, didn't I? Trip actions was one way, so I think you got the team from a while here. Like, I don't know. So, I mean, it is, you know, you probably know the same thing, Mike, when you spend a long time in a place like you did as well, and you come back the first time, it's like all the memories flash back, and getting to see some old friends and drive past the old house that we sold a couple months. You know, like, there's going to be, obviously, it's a lot of fun to see people, and I'm sure it's 75 degrees here, it's a beautiful sunny day. This morning they de-iced the plane in Minneapolis and delayed us by a half hour and slush and, you know, as I went way to the cab. So I could get used to this a little longer, but I'm pretty sure my job and my contract has me back in Minneapolis and joining you sometime soon.
Yeah, that's cool. You know, and I'll probably I'm going to the All-Star game in Florida. But the one thing that you realize, maybe it'll be different for you, but it wasn't like this is my 18th year in Minnesota. I don't know, every trip down to South Florida, like every year that went by, it became more and more of a business trip. And I mean this with all due respect to my old colleagues and my friends, but it just like you see less and less people for some reason. Next thing you know, it's just like you're going to any city. So maybe it won't be for the same for you.
Well, this one will probably be more, you know, just different because it's the first time in 3 months since I packed the car up and put Sammy in the backseat and drove from St. Pete to Minneapolis. But yeah, I'm sure as it goes along, it'll be more. A little more normal, and we do enjoy Minneapolis too. It's not a knock at that. It's been a fun kind of blown by the last 3 months working with you up there. So it's been a good time.
Yeah, and you won your first meat raffle.
That was a bucket list item for sure. I only spent $4 and got 2 New York strip steaks. My wife was happy. We had dinner. We had made them last night, pan fried them. They were delicious. So I know it's a good way to sucker us in to get more money, but I figured I might as well, you know, embrace the Minnesota culture with that and the pull tabs and cross country skiing and karaoke at Vegas Lounge. Like, you got to go all in, right?
So yeah, absolutely. All right, let's go to Twitter questions. We got about 150 questions. We'll answer about 10 minutes worth. Sorry if you didn't make the cut here. You know, I'm basically interrupting Joe. His first 2 or 3 days in Florida is not to do podcasts. So let's get going. Blake asks, what is your personal opinion of Boldy's AAV? Was $7 million a year a little too much, too little? I was hoping to see it around $6-6.5 million personally. I mean, I'm shocked that they did 7 years at seven, not the Wild. I think Boldy's camp, because I think that they really think that with the cap going up, Joe, that in, you know, 3, 4, 5 years, he could be an $8-9 million player. And so I think when the Wild realized that they can get him at seven, they just took the bet that, hey, yeah, they're going to be overpaying him the next couple of years. But eventually, if he continues on this path, he's going to be, this is going to be a big bargain.
Yeah. I asked agent Brian Bartlett the other day, I'm like, is there some risk here? He goes, of course there is. If he turns into this elite player we all think he can be, he'll be underpaid at the end of his deal. But he also has $49 million, a lot of it front loaded too, to bank on in case he has an injury or something happens. You know, you never want to pass up that first fortune. Evan Longoria toyed with him that long time ago when he signed after 8 games in the big leagues. But yeah, I think he also will be a free agent at age 29, I believe. So if he does like kick ass on this deal and becomes a 30 goal scorer, then when the cap is, they hope like over $90 million by then you can kind of go crazy there. So, but he likes it here. He's a fit. He loves the team. The team feels he's a cornerstone guy you can build around. So the 7-7 didn't really bother me too much. And it'll look good probably later on in his career.
Matthew has a good question. Says, how does a contract like this affect the locker room? I know the boys are happy, but they also have to realize it will affect who can resign and who might get traded. It's a great question, Matthew. And that was one I was asking around the room today, because it does. I mean, you know, Matt Dumba, if he didn't know before, is not going to be back next year. He certainly knows now. And I guarantee you there are guys like Jordan Greenway. And even though I think you and I both think there's no chance they trade like a Marcus Foligno or Ryan Hartman, I'm sure even guys like that start to think like, hey, you know, could my time be coming to an end here? Because they all have calculators. They all know the math doesn't work. And yeah, while you're excited for a teammate, this clearly will have, a lasting effect on and determine the futures of certain players. And I think you and I both think that coincidentally, it's going to affect another Brian Bartlett client, and that's Jordan Greenway.
And one of, you know, Boldy's good friends. And I think Boldy lived with Greenway last year, if I'm not mistaken, absolutely. Too. So it's just one of those things that's such a small, tight knit hockey community. And I think the guys were ribbing him yesterday and in the locker room and tell me he had to buy dinner last night. I don't know if he did it buy dinner in DC or not, but I think they're genuinely happy for him. They're genuinely happy for a guy who's 21 years old getting this fortune here. Cause he's a hardworking player, but yeah, like all the RFAs, you know, whether it's Addison or Gustafson or Steele, there's only so much money left there to spend. So, or if you're Ryan Reeves, who they love there too, will he come back next year? I don't know what you think about that, if you could fit him or not.
Yeah, I think it's going to be very much like Nick Deslauriers, where the Wild really wanted Deslauriers back, but he got extra term and money from the Flyers. And I think Reeves is probably going to be the same thing. Like, I think Billy Guerin would love to have him back at 750, but is Ryan Reeves coming back for 750? That'll be the big question. If he thinks that he can get $1.5 million elsewhere or something like that, I think that he'll at least test free agency. So I do think it affects that. Addison's still the one that I just have the sneaking suspicion that he could be somebody that they, depending on what he's going to be commanding, could be somebody that they maybe move this summer. I know that might make Wild fans just shocked, but you know, also people I think know me by now that I wouldn't just throw that out there with having just, you know, having a good sense of that. And, when you look at Spachek and Faber and Hunt and Peart and O'Rourke and all these young defensemen that they have in the pipeline, Addison is somebody that they're going to have to make a serious decision on this offseason.
Definitely. I'm curious to hear your thoughts on Sam Steele. Like, you kind of get lost in the shuffle here because 850 this year, kind of a, prove it deal, and kind of the fresh change of scenery has been great for him. arguments like anybody can play with those two guys, but that's not the case. And like, so he does should get some credit for being able to play with them and and perform well in that situation. So I'm curious, like, hey, does he understand that and know that, hey, I'm benefiting from a really good scenario here? I might not get to play with these guys on another team. So maybe I will not say team friendly, but you know, let's, this guy, they took the chance on me and they bet on me. And now I can maybe come back and enjoy this situation. It's supposed to be, you know, a Tyson Jost kind of guy, you know? So,
yeah, I see, to me, I think that he is a better player than Tyson Jost. I really do. I think it will be an interesting decision that the Wild have. He's arbitration eligible, so this could also be one of those situations, and this is just me totally shooting from the hip, they have no intel on this, but maybe it's one of the situations where you don't qualify him and then you come back to him and say, all right, you know, now let's sign maybe a 2-year deal at $2 million or something and try to get him that way, where he doesn't go to arbitration. A lot of it will depend on what his arbitration case is, on which way they go. But he's been a very serviceable player, and thank God for him, you know, because, you know, obviously Hartman was hurt, but he also has not had the year that I think that he expected to have. And so, you know, Steele goes to that that spot between Kaprizov and Zuccarello and has done a really good job there. Name can't be blank. One of great Twitter names asks, is Goose going to be a cap casualty this offseason? $2 million extra to bring back Addison or Gus might be needed. You also have Faber, Hunt, and O'Rourke coming as well. You know, it's going to be interesting what happens here in the next couple days and weeks with Alex Goligoski, because I don't think he's happy right now. I do think that his agent is going to have a conversation with Bill Guerin here to try to figure out what's going on in the next little while. You know, if you're going to trade Dumba, I mean, you know the way this league is, you can't have enough NHL defensemen. And, you know, even if Alex Goligoski would welcome a change, I don't think that Bill Guerin's going to want to trade him. And, you know, maybe what you say to him is, hey, look, let's talk about this again this offseason about maybe moving you, but let's keep you here for now. What do you think happens with the Alex Goligoski situation?
Yeah, it's a tough one. Like, I asked him the other day, I was like, what's the balance here? Like, are you happy because the team is winning? Like, can you, it makes it easier, or is it still hard to not play? He goes, it could be both, right? It could be both. Like, I could be happy the team's winning, but I'm also frustrated at not playing. And he's been in the league for a long time. He's won a cup. He's obviously came back to Minnesota, his home state, you know, for a reason. He wanted a chance to play here. He played most games last year. And so all of a sudden he's obviously the Wild have their reasons why they like John Merrill over him. But I do agree with you. I think Bill Guerin respects him a lot, has a lot of, you know, a good relationship with him. But he also knows the minute you trade a defenseman, you lose two injury.
Big time.
And so I think, especially if Dumbo's in the block, I just don't see Goligoski going anywhere until at least the summertime. Then you can save some cap space then. If he continues, he wants to play, which last time I talked to him, he still wants to play. I don't think he's retiring yet. But, you know, who knows what will happen in 3 months.
Yeah. Tyler asks, do you expect the Boldy deal to be a catalyst for other extensions to get done in the next? So, 3 to 6 weeks. What do you think? I think that they're going to, as you mentioned, I think right now you start talking to Gustafson and try to put that next peg. I think right now what they want to do is get as much cost certainty as possible so they can count dollars and cents. So I think Gustafson would be the next priority. You know, maybe you try to get Goudreau done now, even though if you go to Goudreau after the season, I think he's going to come back. I don't think there's any pressure to get it done now. It's not like you're going to trade him at the deadline if he's unsigned and a pending UFA. But really, is there much of a priority to get anybody else done other than maybe those two?
Those would be the main ones, because you still want to wait and see on Addison too. Like, if I want to see how the rest of the year goes out there, it's in the lineup. So I think Gustafson would be what guy I'd go to. And maybe Gustafson wants to wait. Maybe he's like, I'm having a great year. Maybe if my year ends this way, my numbers go up, right? And same Steele, if you're arbitration eligible, not a lot of leverage for them to be like, hey, why would they want to wait, you know, if he's playing on the top line the rest of the year? So I don't know. It takes two to tango, right? So the Wild could easily want to go to Gustafson tomorrow and say, I want to sign you a 2-year deal. But maybe he's like, well, let's put a pause button here and let's see how the year goes and then see how much we can get in the summertime.
Joseph said, I heard you tell a story about Craig Leopold calling the league about some stuff after a game when Billy Guerin had a family issue. Is this a common thing for an owner to do? Seems to align with all the culture talk. What I said on a podcast or reported the other day is that after the Buffalo game, you know, I reported that day during the day of the Buffalo game, Bill Guerin lost his father-in-law. And next day, I happened to coincidentally shadow the Situation Room. And it was told to me in there that Craig Leopold, the Wild owner, had actually called the league because he was very upset with the officiating in overtime in Buffalo. And I don't think the league was very enamored with the officiating in overtime in Buffalo either, by the way. And what I was told was that that is the first time in since 2008 that Bill Guerin, that Craig Leopold has owned the Minnesota Wild, that he has actually called the league. So I think it was to just, you know, get some pressure off Billy and not put him in that position. But I know the Wild were very, very upset with that. But I was told that it was totally the first time that's ever happened. Here's a funny question. Bill Guerin's burner Twitter account, Joe, probably wishful thinking, but do you get any sense that Freddie would do a team-friendly deal for some term, much like Hartman did? I think that he would, right? Don't you? When you have a relationship like this with a coach, the grass is definitely not always greener.
It isn't, and he fits with the way they want to play. He's a very well-respected guy on that team. The coach obviously had him go way back, and he trusts him. I think Goodrow trusts Evason, and I think as long as he's here, he's going to have a pretty prominent role. He'll have power play time. He'll have penalty kill time. Like, so, you know, unless the offer is going to blow you out of the water, I think it's something to be said for liking where you're at and being comfortable in your role. And he's already moved around a little bit too. So I think, depending on what team-friendly means for that number, but I think he'd be a guy who would come back.
Yeah. Here's a good question, Joe. I don't know what you think of this. Jang Art asks, is having two writers covering the Wild working out as you'd hoped? You were both outstanding, so I am, for one, am enjoying the double coverage. But I was just wondering how you guys at the Athletic feel exceeding expectations. I mean, I could tell you, wouldn't you agree that yesterday, maybe you wouldn't agree, but for me, yesterday was, man, stress-free, because I had another story on my plate, and just having you there was such a, you know, breath of fresh air for me. I mean, even remember, I don't know if you remember this, but I was at the Atlanta airport connecting, and I said to you, hey, do you need help? I got 30 minutes here. Do you need help with the news headline? And then you send me the link. News headline's up. You know, you took total control of it. And I just think, you know, that's where, I mean, yesterday was proof positive. I think where man, it really was just a breath of fresh air to have a second person.
No, I mean, it's definitely been great. I think both of us have, you know, been grinding for a number of years and on our beats and cover it relentlessly. And so it has been nice to collaborate ideas, just share story ideas back and forth. It's really helpful, I think, for both of our stories that way. And just on a personal level, like being able to like go home for Christmas and spend more time that way, and driving with my wife and our dog to go see our family. And so you've been able to get away too a little bit. I'm probably missing your first few home games probably in a long time, or first road games in a long time. So I think as far as like professionally and then personally, as a work-life balance, has been good. And I also been kind of impressed, like, you know, you've been here for 20 some years, right? So there's not been really an ego there, like more like your territorial, like don't write a story on the analytics team, or don't write a story on the pre-soft, or don't write a story about this. Like, there's never been like, oh, that's my guy, you know. You give me guys.
I think Wild fans that just heard you say that would laugh, because they know that I don't want to write about the analytics team. It's just not my cup of tea. Yeah. But in all seriousness, like, that story was just so fascinating and so well done. And, you know, learning one more about Matt Sells, but again, the whole operation. And I just think, and this is to me where like the value of having you here is that you write these stories that are complex so simply to understand. Like, the analytics story was just outstanding. The story that you did on practice and the science to it and the heart monitors and all that stuff, by the way, without ever telling me that you even working on it behind the scenes. And the next thing you know, you're like, hey, by the way, I'm working on this story. Yeah. You know, to me, those are stories that I just don't think that I'm sometimes equipped enough to write, maybe from an intelligence standpoint. You know, I mean, I just think that's where, to me, the way that I envision this whole thing working, I just think, you know, I just think Wild fans, you know, I feel bad for Lightning fans, but I think that Wild fans are realizing that maybe some of the promises that we made in the offseason when we announced that you were coming, you know, are really actually coming into fruition, where they are just getting, you know, to me, a luxury of riches from that standpoint.
It has been fun personally for me, just because I've had a whole fresh canvas of stories I can do, right? After writing a lot of stories in Tampa, and like, you, maybe I see things from a different perspective than you do, or maybe you didn't think it's a story, but oh, maybe it is a story. So I think it's just overall, for me, it's been exciting to have watched a whole new locker room, to learn people, to relationships with, and then find a fun story off the ice, as Shaw and Dewar, them doing karaoke and whatever, you know, like finding fun angles, and maybe you or I don't think about things differently. So I think we have different writing styles, different Twitter styles apparently off game. So I think hopefully it's been good for a lot of Wild fans.
A couple more for you, Joe, and then we'll let you go. Doug Erickson asks a future goaltending question. With Gus getting his game together, how far off is Wallstedt for being at least a backup, and what does this mean for Fleury's contract? I know that you're actually working on a Jesper Wallstedt story. In terms of what it means for Fleury's contract, I don't think anything. I think that Bill Guerin wants to, quote, overbake Wallstedt, and I just think the fact that both Gustafsson and Fleury are winning games and playing well, I think that allows him to, quote, overbake Jesper Wallstedt. And Fleury's got 1 year left on his deal, and certainly looks like he can continue to play. So I think that allows that part. So that's my answer to that part of the question. Tell us about Wallstedt. Give us an update on him.
Well, he's been playing really well the last couple of weeks. I think he had like 4 out of 5 like really good starts in a row. I think he's kind of turning a corner. They had worked on him a lot of small things like work habits and practice and conditioning and little things that you learn at going to the pro hockey level at the in North American style hockey. So I think it's probably a luxury for him too, not to feel the pressure of like the team struggling up top. There's a goalie crisis and like we need to have them save the day. And so I think overall they could go into next year having Gustafsson and Fleury as the 1-2 combo again, and then give him another year, get him some spot starts during the season, so you get a taste of the NHL. And then if you want to make a move or whatever, he's ready to do that. I think it takes a lot of time for goaltenders to feel comfortable in their own, in their crease. And then at the NHL level, so much different than AHL. So the more they can get him acclimated without giving him a large responsibility, I think it'll be great for him in the future, because he's a future number one goaltender and a really good one too.
Cool. Two more for you. Then one little fun one. Jacob wants to know, when you talk about lateral move for Dumba, I guess this is for me because he put it in quotes because I always say that. Do you mean someone that could take his top 4 minutes or a seventh defenseman so Goligoski can slide into the lineup as a regular? My guess is that a lateral move, when Bill Guerin talks about it, means somebody that can be as good or better than Dumba in a top four role, not just acquire like a Luke Shen and put Goligoski there. I think if they felt Goligoski was a top four player, he'd be in a top four right now. So I think they want to get an NHL top four defenseman if you're going to trade Dumba. That's just my opinion. Do you agree?
I do. And so if you do go out and get a Luke Shen, it wouldn't be a sixth or seventh defenseman. They already got two of those. So if they feel Luke Shen can be that guy in the top four role, then that's what they would do. Or whoever that, Gavrikov in Columbus, he'll use a glove shot, right? So find different guys that can fit in that role. They don't want to let go of him and then have, I don't even know if they're comfortable yet of putting Cale Nadison in that role right now. He's a rookie defenseman. It takes a while for him to learn. So I think it has to be a lateral in terms of having a guy who could fit in where Dumba plays in the lineup.
Brandon Dahl asks, have you seen enough from this year's call-ups and younger players that would make Marco Rossi expendable in a package to acquire top six help? No. You're not trading Marco Rossi because Sammy Walker's just, been able to play some games. That would be ludicrous. I'm not saying they would never trade Marco Rossi, but it would not be because of the call-ups that we've seen in the minors. It is I don't know if you've talked to Bill Guerin about this. But don't you agree that it is way too soon to give up on a Marco Rossi?
Well, absolutely. I mean, I talked to Garrett, talked to Tim Army, and who sees him every day in Iowa, and like, wait till this kid's 24 years old. Give him some time, right? Like, and with the history this organization has had up the middle at center, the last thing you want to do is give up a guy who could be a potential top six center playing next to Matt Boldy for a number of years, right? Or whatever my case might be. So, yes, it's probably been frustrating for fans. It's frustrating for Marco Rossi to be in Iowa right now instead of the Minnesota Wild, but he has a skill set. If he can just turn that switch mentality wise of just commanding the game and being that kind of alpha kind of player, because he has a skill set. I don't think you want to give up on a guy that young, that talented this soon.
Mahu 02 wants me to ask you, when am I going to go haze Joe Smith and do a meaty mailbag blog? We haven't done any mailbags this year. Don't we think we probably should at some point?
We're probably due sometime here before the deadline, right? And we can take, at least instead of having you do the full media blog, we can split it up, right? And pick on that way.
Might have to do it in like 8 parts, though.
Well, just 7 days in a week, right? Daily mailbag part 7, running Saturday. So, yeah, I think we tried some live rooms before. I don't know how much fans like them or not like them, but I think mailbags are a way for it to be permanent. And people, if they don't hear the live room or miss it or, can't be there, to kind of have that stick out and kind of reshare that. So we should probably do one come up here soon so people can get their questions in and see how long we can go and just piss off our editor, Jake Leonard.
Yeah, absolutely. Hey, Joe, really appreciate you doing this. I want you to go enjoy the weather and a couple days of R&R. Are you looking forward to the father-son? Or really, it's the mentor's trip. Like I was talking to Matt Dumba this morning, his brother Kyle, who played junior hockey, actually came on a trip when he was 18 years old. His dad's been on a bunch. In fact, the last one in Edmonton, his dad was on, and he's on this one as well. But I got to think you always enjoy getting good stories out of this type of stuff.
Oh, absolutely. The dad's trips, even Tampa, were fantastic. A lot of really good personalities. I think the dads had a lot of rough time in the mornings after. They had a lot of Nashville trips for Tampa dads. So a few of them were a little, had to get some help from their sons to get up in the morning sometimes. So they're a lot of fun. That's some of the best stories that, you know, Mike, are from family members or from parents, from brothers, from wives. And so This will be a really fun time, especially staying, you know, South Florida and Tampa. They're going to enjoy the hell out of this one. So
yeah,
I'll show them where to go.
Yep. Todd Boldy, I would assume, is going to get a nice dinner either at Burns Steakhouse or the Meat Market or somewhere on Las Olas. I got to think Todd Boldy's got a nice dinner coming his way. Hey, Joe, thanks for doing this. As everybody that listens to all these podcasts on The Athletic know, we have a vast array of podcasts across our network, every sport. Jason Priestley, the actor, director, remember Jason Priestley from Beverly Hills 90210?
Wow.
Yep. He joins myself, Jesse Granger, and Rob Pizzo on the Athletic Hockey Hour on Wednesday, Athletic Hockey Show, I should say, on Wednesday. Jason Priestley directs and narrates Offside, the Harold Ballard story, and that is, again, on Wednesday's Athletic Hockey Show. Annual subscriptions to The Athletic are just $2 a month for a year when you visit theathletic.com/straightfromthesource. Follow us on your favorite podcast platform and leave a rating and review. And don't forget to subscribe to The Athletic Hockey Show on YouTube at youtube.com/@TheAthleticHockeyShow. Straight from the Source will return in the next week or so. Believe it or not, at some point with Andrew Height, that podcast, as Jeff DeMette, our illustrious producer, would know, has been collecting dust since we recorded it in early December, but it will be up at some point in the near future. Joe, thanks for doing this, and talk to you next week, everybody.
Thank you.